Welcome to the first podcast from FinalBossBlues.com. This is Despain speaking, and it's our very first podcast, so hopefully it goes over well. We can do a couple more in the future. Like I said, this is Despain. You probably know me from a number of RPG Maker forums. I've been using RPG Maker since 2000, since RPG Maker 2000 came out. And since then, I have spent over a decade involved in this hobby and various RPG Maker communities. You probably know me because I'm typically an abrasive asshole on the forums. I kind of have that reputation, but at the same time, I run a website that you're on right now, FinalBossBlues.com, which hosts a variety of RPG Maker tutorials and game design articles and pixel art and stuff like that. So, I mean, for my reputation, I do try to give back, and this podcast is, you know, part of that, to contribute to the community. So I have two co-hosts here. I'll let them introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm the other resident asshole of the RPG Maker community, Raynard Frost. I've also been using RPG Maker since the 2000 days, even dabbled in 95 a little bit. Pretty much, you may know me from RPG Maker Web, doing Ruins of Rydos, that little 8-bit crap game that tickles your nostalgia bone.
I like RPGs and long walks on the beach. That's about it.
So the other guy here is our resident otaku guy.
Yeah, hey everyone, I'm Crimson, Keelum, whatever you want to call me. I don't really have a history with RPG Maker as vast as Reynard or Despain, but I consider myself very well-rounded in these sort of things, and I would love to help you guys try to make your game better and just talk to all of you regarding these subjects.
Okay, cool. So there are three co-hosts. They will be joining me. We will be the typical trio that you will be encountering over the next podcasts. Like I said, we're going to try to do these every week. So if you're going to have any comments, you know, feedback, we're definitely up for hearing that. We always are. You know, we're not the kind of person, you know, who, you know, oh, no, you criticized me. We actually would love to hear feedback. So now with that little bit of introduction out of the way, let's dive right into it. Today's topic, I mean, every week we're going to try to have a topic, is world immersion, which was Killam's suggestion that we talk. I mean, it's something that it's general to not just RPG Maker, but all video game design. But it's kind of difficult to get really immersed into a RPG Maker game, especially, you know, with RTP graphics, and a lot of them have bad writing and stuff like that. So,
well, it's universal amongst most entertainment is trying to get immersed in the world when all your resources are bad. I mean, look at 1950s movies where they had paper and tinfoil, like, we are in space! It just didn't work that well. And it's the same thing with RPG Maker. People jump in, they throw down their RTP, and they go, you know, you are the long-lost hero going across to save from the Dark Lord, because I want to be like Dragon Warrior. And you sit there, and you just go, ho-hum, I've done this before. So, you know, unlike certain other games, like Metroid Prime, where you jump in the first 5 minutes, you're like, holy crap, I'm a lady in a spacesuit kicking space pirate ass.
Hey, save that for later. Come on, it's your trump card.
Duh, come on. I'm too excited.
Yeah, before we dive into the details, let's talk about what world immersion is, and how do we define it, what it means to us, and do we notice it? Like, or maybe do we not notice it, and that's the good thing. So I guess I'll start. What is world immersion to me? Let's start with an example. We'll definitely be talking about more games with good examples in the near future. But I remember I was playing Black Mesa very recently on Steam. And I was playing it in the middle of the day, and there was a glare on my computer screen, and I was like, ugh, this is terrible, I'm just not getting into it. But then later that night, I turned off all the lights. It was really dark in my room. I had the headphones on, and I was just playing the game, and I was just totally into it. There was no world for me other than the world of the game. And that's what world immersion is really about. That's the kind of thing, the feeling that you want, where they're playing your game and they're just totally involved in what's going on. They forget their own life. They forget what's going on, and they're just totally involved. They really inhabit the shoes of the of the POV character. So that's the kind of thing that I really like in games. Let's go around. What do you guys think?
It's funny that you mentioned the whole turning the lights off and dimming everything down. The Silent Hill games, especially on handhelds, put a disclaimer before you even start playing where they go, you know, for the best experience to get really into it, turn all the lights off, plug in headphones, turn up the volume, prepare to shit your pants. And to me, that really helps, is the developer itself just goes, you know, there's such things as real life getting in your way, lights, glare, all that. So if you want the ideal experience, go ahead and do this. And it's not only just the lighting and the music. It's also character interaction.
I mean, exactly.
If you don't have believable characters, or if your dialogue is just absolutely terrible, it's going to shatter immersion. So it's just trying to make your world feel alive and believable.
Well, for me, I actually don't consider it a necessity as much as you guys probably do. I consider it basically you have a player, right? The player, no matter how you want to look at it, isn't really going to be inside the game. You can in a physical sense, it's not possible. And I look at it like this: you have a game, and a player is playing the game, obviously. But what world immersion really does, it makes the player want to explore more. Like you don't. It's giving them the option. The world is huge, it's vast, and the player himself is choosing to explore the world. He isn't being forced to. It interests him, and that's what it is for me, really.
Well, character dialogue helps with that. I mean, if you don't care about the people in the world through the little interactions you have with them, you're not going to want to explore it as much.
Right, but let's get on a tangent. I just want to clear this out of the way. Voice acting is not world immersion. You don't need it. Please don't put it in. Paper Mario was a perfect example of this game. There was no voice acting, but the characters were so vibrant and beautiful, it didn't need it. And then you have other games that use it like it's a necessity.
Yeah, like the Walking Dead games, the ones that are based on the comics. They're on Steam right now, super popular, and the voice acting in those are phenomenal, and they really bring you into the game. And like Renner was saying, it's all about caring about the characters. The Walking Dead game does that fantastically. Really good writing, really strong voice acting, and I actually care about the characters so much. If Clementine gets hurt, I'm just like sitting here using my computer.
No!
No, I love her. She's my Clementine. Nothing's going to happen to
her. Well, no, but you know, it's interesting. It depends on the genre of game and what you're going for. Some games need voice acting. Like Walking Dead, without voice acting, it wouldn't nearly be as immersive. But if we're talking like an RPG Maker game, and you're going like, hello, I am Dark Man, the Dark Hero, it's just going to sound retarded. So it's...
Oh, especially if they have like poor sound
quality. How are you guys?
Exactly. So I agree that you don't need voice acting. Bad voice acting will ruin your game. Good voice acting will make it better, but it's the same thing for any other kind of resource. You have to have good resources that fit. So you don't have to have top quality voice acting. You don't need like Hollywood actors and shit. You just need things that fit in the game. So if you're playing a game like Minecraft where you're running around and it's just you in a wide world, you don't need like this guy to belt out lines of, you know, monologue. But for a game like The Walking Dead, like Dez was saying, you definitely need the voice acting for that.
Well, yeah, but I also agree that you need it. But there are some games where actually this is prominent in the recent Final Fantasy titles where the voice acting is actually a core concept of the character. And that like you need to have voice acting to add to the character, which is where a lot of games go wrong with it. And that really just – it's awful to see.
But then there's, you know, RPG Maker games that try to go for the Super Nintendo aesthetic. And then having voice acting in that just kills it. Like, there was no voice acting back then. It just doesn't fit. And some games it fits, some games it doesn't. That's the big thing, right? It has to be right for the game itself. You have to think about the overall experience, and that's what world immersion is all about.
Yeah, I can't really imagine any 2D game having really good voice acting. I mean, it would have to be really good 2D, like, what was that furry Metroidvania game that was out?
What?
It's on Xbox Live Summer of Arcade. I forget what it's called, but it was basically 2D hand-drawn animations, anthropomorphic characters, and it had voice acting in it that at times was cheesy, but for the most part, it really helped bring out the atmosphere to the game.
I can see it working in 2D games if they still have that level of production, but like if it's a game where you have big pixels. Like your own game, Ruins of Rhydos or whatever. If there was voice acting in that, it just wouldn't, it wouldn't fit. It would make no sense at all. Because games like that, they just don't work that way.
All right, let's move on to why it's important to us, and is it really a necessity to have it?
Immersion, is world immersion necessary? I don't think it's necessary, but I think that it's something that you want to achieve in every game that you create. Like, if somebody's playing their game, you can't really control the way the player plays the game. Like, if somebody plays it, you know, on a little window in their screen and they, you know, have their own music playing or something, control how a player does that. Yeah, I know. Like, you work so hard to put music in your
game.
Not
even that. Like, one of my friends are playing their game, they have their TV on and they have their DVD player on and they can't even, like, focus on what's going on. It pisses me off so much.
Yeah, but you can't control it. You have to understand that, you know, there's an audience that does that kind of thing. But for those who don't do that, those are the players who actually want the world immersion. They want the experience, and they want us as developers to really give them the opportunity to dive.
Well, once again, it also depends on genre. Like with RPG Maker games, for the most part, you're definitely going to want to work on your world immersion, because for the most part, a lot of games, you're making RPGs, so they're going to be very story-oriented. But for a game like Tetris, it doesn't even matter. or you know...
Yeah.
A good game that really didn't need world immersion but still had a good element of it was Kirby. Like, the Kirby games,
though
you don't really – it doesn't really matter what Dream Land is and the storytelling is very minimalistic and no dialogue, it's still – you feel like that world is alive. Like, the atmosphere pops out. Even the little animation details of the background just bouncing around. And you run around, you're encountering all these enemies. Like, I enjoy Kirby on a moderate level, but a good friend of mine loves Kirby. You know, he knows all the enemy names. He knows, like, oh, in this game, he did this, and then he fights King Dedede, and he picks Kirby characters in, like, Smash Brothers and stuff. That world really popped out, came alive to him, and it didn't really have a lot of exposition. It was just all about graphical presentation and animations, and just in your mind, as a designer, you're keeping details like that under consideration, where you're just like, you know, hey, he's going to be in this vibrant forest area. I want these little flowers to be bouncing around.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But for me, it's not a necessity. It's not something you shoot forward to. It's something that you just develop over time. Like, you have good characters, and they and the plot, they all combine to form the world immersion. It's not something that you can develop on your own. It's something that your characters have to develop, and the plot has to develop, and your setting has to develop.
Yeah.
Well, like what you were saying about Kirby, it reminds me of probably my favorite game of all time, Super Mario Galaxy.
Really?
1 and 2. They have no story. The entire story for Super Mario Galaxy 2 is Bowser is big. Like, seriously, that's the whole story. In the beginning of the game, he goes, I'm huge! And, like, then you have to go fight him and save Peach or something. But that doesn't matter, because it's in Super Mario Galaxy, the gameplay is immersive. That's what pulls you in. Like, you hold the controller, and you're moving Mario around, and you just, that's it. You feel it, you know, you can feel it. It's not about the story, not about the characters. It's about the way the game feels.
I see what you're saying.
And, yeah, so it's different for different genres like that. Like, in an RPG Maker game, it's not really how the game feels. It's about the story and the character and the worlds. But in a platformer, it's about how connected you are physically with your fingers on the controller. So it really does change for genre. So
So adventure's a good one. Horror is more of a necessity, obviously.
Oh, horror is the most difficult genre to get immersed in. Like, and it also, it varies depending on who your audience is, because there's some audience members where the core element you're trying to sell, they have to find scary. Like, you throw Resident Evil at me, I'm like, all right, this is an action game. This doesn't scare me at all because biological zombies. But you give me Fatal Frame or Silent Hill, I'm shitting my pants.
All right, so you were talking about horror games, and there are games that have horror elements. Maybe not actual horror elements, but if you're playing a game like Metroid Prime, which we're talking about as, you know, the example of
the
a brilliant world
example.
Immersion experience...
Yeah, I went there.
the prime example. It has elements that could fit into a horror game. It has elements that could fit into an RPG game, especially, you know, with the lore and the backstory.
Definitely.
You know, you
scanning
scan all the statues
everything.
And the writing on the wall. Yeah, absolutely. And And that's a big part of the immersive experience. It makes you feel like the world is so much bigger than what you're just experiencing.
Yeah, exactly that. When I was playing it, I'm like, this world is huge. But in reality, it's really small. There's like, what? There's maybe four areas, but it just feels so big. There's so much lore. You're all by yourself. There's no one there. Each time you stumble upon a chosen artifact, it's like a little piece of civilization making you feel less alone. It was so amazing how they pulled it off. I'm still to this day impressed by it.
Well, it also helps that you see everything through her visor. You know, you've got the HUD up, you're scanning everything, it brings the info up. It was very good with minimalistic HUD, and I especially love the transitions. Like, within the first 10 minutes of that game, you're sitting there and you hear this huge – you see this huge space vista, and then the music starts playing. She lands in the ship, she comes out, she does her jump. You see this huge – and you're just like, oh – for the first time, I'm sitting there going, holy crap, 3D Samus. I go from Super Metroid to this, and I'm just like, wow, this is blowing my mind. But then it zooms into her visor, and suddenly I'm like, wait, no, I'm not controlling Samus. I am Samus. And it really was enjoyable where you got to – at first, I enjoyed where I'm scanning all these objects and stuff. But near the end, I'm just kind of like, crap, did I miss that one back there? I can't get back there.
Yeah, exactly. That was
100%!
Yeah, there's definitely a completionist element to that game. I mean, I've played that game a bunch of times, and just, I mean, the first time around, I did everything 100%, and after that, it was like, well, I've done it already, let's just, you know, get through this game and enjoy the
world. You did everything the first time?
First time around. I mean, I after I beat it, I would go back and, you know, find the things that I missed. It's not like I did it on, like, one solid playthrough, but, I mean, it's the kind of game where you want to go back and you want to go into every nook and cranny of this world and you want to scan every enemy, you know, you want to scan every plant, you know, all that stuff. You want to, because it just, you feel like the world is so much bigger than you and you have to learn.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Having the player himself want to make that decision to investigate the world, not having it forced upon him, is such an important element.
Well, yeah, no, I agree with that. Is my favorite thing in games is I especially like this in Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker, where a lot of Kojima's games get criticism for where they just shove cutscenes down your throat. But one thing that I thought was, you know, I'm going to have 80% cutscenes. But one thing I liked with Peace Walker was that they only gave you the core story that was necessary, and any supplemental story they had as collectible cassette tapes, where on your own, if you cared, you could go into the menus, pop in the cassette tape, and listen to these conversations between characters that helped add to the exposition, helped expand the world, helped you get to know these characters better. And it was completely optional. So gamers like me ate it up, while gamers like some of my other friends, they could just run in and do missions together and totally skip that and not feel like it's forced upon them.
Awful people.
Awful.
What you said about cutscenes brings me to my other favorite game, Portal 2. That game had amazing cutscenes, but they never felt like cutscenes. They were just part of the game itself, because you retained control of your character, and, you know, they happened. Like, in the very beginning, you know, you're in this cube, and Wheelie's carrying you around, and the walls are shattering and stuff, but you're still in control of the character. You can look wherever you want to look, and it's happening around you. You're in the middle of it. You're not just, you know, it doesn't take you out of the action to sit back, you know, from a third person perspective and see things and hear people talk. You actually are right in the middle of it. And that's fantastic. And that's something that is nearly impossible to really get going in an RPG Maker game, but that's not going to stop us from trying.
Yeah. You know, just walking around in a circle, text streaming everywhere. You know, that's going to be very difficult to pull off with an RPG Maker game, but what I like to do in my own project to try and make it so extra story stuff is at the player's choice, not thrown at you, is I design it with the idea in mind where I have a core experience that gives the bare minimum details. So if you just want to do a simple dungeon crawler, you can rush through, get a really minimalistic storyline that just covers some bases, and get through the game in like half the time and have that fun experience, just deal with the gameplay. But if you do a bit more exploration, collect a few items, talk to a few more characters, the world really livens up and the characters get a bit more development.
Yeah, absolutely. Like what we were just saying about, you know, different people want to play it in different ways. And when you're designing a game, you have to think about all the different, you know, there's a whole spectrum. You know, how much time are people going to put into your game? How much world immersion do they want out of the experience? And you have to design the game, you know, with the whole spectrum in mind. And you can, you know, put little things into the game here and there for some people. with the full awareness that, you know, not everybody is going to see it, but the people who do see it are going
exactly.
to appreciate
like,
it.
Exactly, like the very first Resident Evil game, it had a bunch of these lab notes, which I just found so fascinating. Everything was detailed and logged. They had how the infection spread, everything.
Yeah, it definitely, like, made the game more expansive. It also added a bit more to the horror feel for me. When I was playing through Resident Evil 2, and I got to see through these things, and people were like, now I'm going to jump back to Resident Evil 1. But there was one file in particular where the guy is actually he's infected, and he's describing
itchy, scratchy, itchy, scratchy.
Yeah, itchy, scratchy. And his manner of writing goes from he's this scientist and he's totally educated to where he's just this raving maniac.
Itchy, scratchy food. And then he just busts out of a closet door and just bites your head. Oh, that was hands down one of the scariest moments of my life when I was like 10 years old. Oh my God.
No, but yeah, like Resident Evil doesn't really have a lot of scares in my opinion because it's a lot of jump scares and it's all science oriented. And I personally don't find that scary. But when they add little details like that and you get so sucked into this little narration, then suddenly jump out and they're like, hi, I wrote that. I'm going to bite your face off. Then it's you're just like, oh, shit. So it's in the moment. And that's really kind of just in your face scares with a little bit of under your skin scares. Whereas a game like Silent Hill, you're really immersed in that world. Everything's foggy. And you don't know what's going on, and they don't really jump out with scares. They just have this, you expect something to get you at any moment, and then when something finally does come, you're like, nope.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I've never really played those games, but something you just said really gives me an idea of something to talk about. You said that like you see the character's writing before you actually get the actual scare, the big payoff.
He was writing a log of him basically turning to a zombie, and then this happened, I think, maybe like a week before the actual incident happened. He wasn't writing it while the player was in the mansion.
Yeah, but you like find it before you meet him.
Yeah.
Because that's really cool, and that's something that gives me an awesome idea to talk about in terms of world immersion, the idea of foreshadowing what's going to happen because the other people in the world are alive, you know, and there's going to be traces of their story here and there. And when you actually encounter them or see where their story ends up, it feels like, you know, this whole world is you're just a part of it, you know, and that's something that can definitely be applied to RPG Maker games, the idea of foreshadowing.
This is going to look like I got the idea from this podcast now, because that's exact when I was saying collecting items, that's what I'm doing is you're going to run around this tower and you're going to find notes of somebody who's deeper in. And you're basically through these notes, you're going to get hints as to what the weaknesses of enemies and bosses might be. Or
oh, that's interesting.
Going through. And, you know, until you finally find this person, you get to, like, find out, you know, what the hell is going on. So it's kind of like both – instead of just having, like, a scan skill, you can find these notes and it kind of gives you tips on how best to deal with enemies and bosses while also helping flesh out the reality of the game.
That's really cool. I like how it ties the story into the mechanics, like, to put it all as one whole experience. You know, you don't find notes that say, you know, press this button. It's the note about the character, about the world that
yeah,
you're both
like,
inhabiting
together. Like, he's just run
really
around
cool.
And you find this note and he's just, you know, oh, well, you know, I encountered this thing and then we tried this method and it didn't work, but then we tried this and the thing exploded, stuff like that. So it's more from a character's perspective instead of just, you know, try using a fire attack, Billy.
That's a really good idea. Do we find out what happens to that guy?
Yes. Spoilers. You will eventually find out what happens to him, and he's integral to the plot. He's not some like side character.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they don't have to be integral to the plot. Like I remember playing the first Portal and finding the Ratman dens, being like, "Holy shit, what's going on here?" And it's all about the feeling. You know, you don't really learn about Ratman himself unless you go into, you know, the extended universe stuff with the comics and all that. But like when you're playing the game, you don't need that stuff because it's you're like, there's somebody here, there've been people here before in my situation or something like that.
Yeah,
and you're just
you bring that up because I had done the same thing where I had found those I didn't even know his name was Ratman. Like I had found those rooms and I thought like, "Oh, this is really cool detail." But I never went into the expanded stuff and going like, you know,
oh, I didn't read them. I just looked them up on the Portal Wikipedia after I beat the game. I was like, all right, let's learn a little more.
Well, I never done research, so I didn't know that, but I still appreciated those all the same on their own, where you jump in those rooms and you just see, like, the cake is a lie, and you're just like, wow, I'm not the only person they've done this to.
And then there's more and more of them as the game goes on. And at the end of the game, you're in the whole sequence where you're escaping. It's just like, yep. Wow. Like, it's just, it's deep. It's really deep. And that's cool. So, that kind of thing can be done in RPG Maker, where you just put those kind of hints that lead to the reveal of, you know, there's stuff going on too. You know, you're not just the only person in the world. So let's talk more about RPG Maker itself, or maybe not RPG Maker, but RPG design specific to, you know, our audience here. How can we apply some of these ideas to designing RPGs?
Well, it's really, really hard, actually. You're limited to graphics, you're limited to sounds, you're limited in a lot of areas, and I even don't have that much advice about it. It's just really difficult if you guys want to take a shot.
Well, honestly, in my opinion,
great co-host.
Hey, I've got nothing to say about this. You guys take over.
You a nice intro. Come on.
but what I think is these limitations help breed creativity. Like, if you have too many resources, too much freedom, you kind of get lazy about it, or you don't really push yourself in the ways that limitations will force on you. Like, I'm limiting myself to 8-bit graphics and 8-bit music. I don't have any voiceovers. You know, I'm not having any cool hand-drawn cutscenes. It all has to be through gameplay and character exposition. And for an RPG Maker game, trying to get world immersion, it's like we talked about, where you can have, like in Resident Evil, you can have notes people left, you can have conversations with people talking about events that are going on. You know, some people, they'll just have their NPCs going like, you know, try exploring that cave, Billy, when they should be going like, oh, did you hear about, you know, such and such happening? I was actually talking with one of the members of the RPG Maker community, Hampants, and we were talking about different intros and how we should handle them in the game. And one thing we brought up was the intro to Final Fantasy II. And on the NES and on the Game Boy Advance, Dawn of Souls, the intro is basically there is some scrolling text and, you know, a couple little 2D scenes, as opposed to the PS1 version, where you have this huge cutscene that basically shows what is happening during all these events, instead of them telling you what's happening. You don't even find out the names of the nations that are just messing crap up, which is Palamecia. In the PlayStation 1 version, you just see these four people running, fighting these demonic soldiers, getting the hell out, and you're just like, I care what's going on, what happens next?
Yeah, show,
it
don't
just,
tell.
It just, it show, snaps you right in. And it's, you know, but even so, when you're looking at the 2D version and you just have your scrolling text saying, you know, oh, there's Palamecia and they're going to fuck shit up. We were discussing that, and I thought a good hybrid between the two that you could do with RPG Maker is, instead of just having the scrolling text and then a few shots of what happens, and without having this huge CGI cutscene, you can basically have it through the 2D. You have a town, and you've got a few people talking, and then suddenly they're attacked, and the defender's going, oh, it's these guys, they're attacking. And, you know, you can see that that the invaders have this overwhelming technology and these abilities, and you can see your characters being attacked in this situation, and then they flee. And it both, through dialogue, introduces who the enemy is, who your allies are, what's the immediate situation. And throughout this whole experience, you've got this great action, this great hook that draws you in, and you're just like, holy crap, what's going on? Who are these people? What happens next? How can we pay these guys back? Especially if you have a scene during this attack where somebody you care about, or somebody who is, you know, an easily identifiable victim, where it's, you know, a small kid or something, gets effed up, does some kind of atrocious act, like, I'm going to smash puppies, that makes the player go, this guy's a dick, I want him to pay.
Yeah, the idea of opening a game or a story in media res, like right in the middle of things, scrolling text, if you guys, you know, take anything away from this podcast, please don't open your game.
There's nothing wrong with it, but it's never used well.
Yeah, sure.
No.
Never used well. I mean, Reynard's example was perfect. I mean, why explain that stuff when you can put the player right into it? Like, just put him right into the story so he automatically cares. He doesn't have to know everything from the beginning. The whole experience of the game, you have hours to explain these things and explain them to the characters as well as the player, instead of just putting the words up on the screen, you know? Like, that's a really good way of breaking immersion. If you want to, you know, just put it out there like that, and the player has very little investment. Why does the character not know these things when they told me up front? Let the player learn.
But there's nothing wrong with it. Like, Final Fantasy VI had a scrolling text introduction, and there was really nothing wrong with it. But that might have explained how the world came to be, not necessarily the world now, but...
Well, it's not so much that it's bad, but there are better ways to do it. That scrolling text, yeah. I kind of zoned out. Like, I didn't care. If they had done instead where they showed those events through, like, sprite cutscenes where they're like, you know, oh, there's this world and there's this war going on. If they had shown it to me, I would have been more invested. I wouldn't have cared more. Like, I also learned this through working on my own project where the very first alpha demo I showed off, there's just scrolling text that went too fast. And I was just going like, these are core details. This is all you need to know. Go. And at the time it worked because the player just basically walked into town and then did gameplay. But through that talk with Ham Pants and, you know, figuring all this stuff out, I'm now going to redo the intro where it's the characters are actually sitting together on their way to this destination and through each other comparing notes. I'm going to cover that same details without having the player sit there through a huge wall of text. Instead, they're going to find out these are how these characters are. I want to know more about these characters. And through this interaction, they'll know better which character they want to pick to be them.
When you can choose which character you're being again? I haven't even played it. I mean, I promised.
No, I kept telling you to wait until I've got the next demo done, which should be soon. That's dev speak for when I feel like it. But it's basically you get to pick. There's two siblings. There's a guy spearman, and then there's a chick paladin, and you basically get to choose who you want to be. It's kind of like where you play Mass Effect and you get to pick between Bro Shep and Fem Shep. But the thing I did differently is I made it whoever you don't pick is in the game as an NPC, like as part of your party.
Like
with Pokemon, except they're always with you instead of showing up going, "Hi, Billy, let's catch some Pokemons." But
I mean, I will admit that Pokemon does not have a very immersive feel when you play the game. But that doesn't stop it from being an amazing game.
Yeah, it's definitely gameplay for addiction. I mean, their later games had a bit more immersion into it, but it's very just minimalistic manga anime storyline.
And a lot of the dialogue is bad, but I mean, I'm okay with
kids,
it. Because
but the gameplay is entertaining for adults. But yeah, it's basically I'm having it where you can, through this intro cutscene, you get to find out about which character that you will be able to play as you, and players will be able to actually pick which personality they think is more fun for them to play without sacrificing not experiencing this character anymore. This character will still be with them, and they'll still be able to control them in battles, but they'll be able to pick which mask they wish to jump with and make decisions with.
At the very beginning, I feel like you don't really have a core understanding of the character you're going to pick. It's like, what, how long is your intro? 10 minutes? 5 minutes?
No. That's why I'm changing the intro, where there's going to be dialogue between the characters. Like, the alchemist character is basically going to talk to these two characters and find out more about them and about their situation instead of having that scrolling text.
Oh, so you're going to have the dialogue, then the character choice further with more dialogue. Okay, I get it.
Exactly.
That's a good idea.
Exactly.
But at the same time, you want to avoid too much. You don't want to, you know, sit
it's
have
like,
your alchemist character
what is
just
your
to
favorite
explain the life history.
No.
I'm going to play the character that likes spaghetti.
No, it's more of we're in this situation, what do you think's going on? And it's basically whatever's covered in that scrolling text, that's all the conversation is going to cover. And more of that's going to be covered later on. But the core concepts are going to be covered, and you basically get to find out these characters' personality through how they react to the situation. Like, it's something as simple as, you know, they're complaining about what they're traveling in, which is just a fucking horse cart. And, you know, one character will complain about the accommodations, while another person will be like, you just need to deal with this. This is the state of affairs right now. And you'll be able to figure out, okay, well, this character's a bit more like this. This character's a bit more like that.
That's good.
Without
I
having
like that.
To go, you know, 20 questions.
Yeah. So let's talk about the things that could potentially really break world immersion. Like, if you're playing a game, something happens that just takes you out of the game completely. I mean, what kind of traps could people fall into when they're making an RPG Maker game that you would really advise that they avoid? Like I said, don't do – I mean, you heard it from these guys. They're okay with it. But if I see a game with scrolling text, I'm like, I'm out of here.
What? All right.
I'm glad I told you to wait then, because – and you're like, what words, flip table? No, but definitely the core thing I always tell everybody is your game is not done until you've played through it like at least once, twice, five times, because bugs are the biggest way to break immersion. Like, I've played some games where, you know, like I tried playing Fallout New Vegas and I got that legendary bug where your first 5 minutes, the guy's head starts rotating. It's funny as hell, but mostly breaks immersion. So, I mean, that can definitely screw stuff up. But on the other hand, there are details, whereas, you know, excluding production values, one thing that can really break immersion is having things that don't fit the situation. Like, if you're running around and I'm about to fight a boss and I'm like, yeah, let's do this. I got my music playing. And then it goes, Mega Man, Mega Man. You know, I'm going to go, wait, shut the hell up. I don't care about
it. I know. I hate that so much.
Mega Man, Mega Man, please pick up.
Oh, my God.
You know,
Mega Man, like, Mega Man, press A to jump.
You know.
I hated that with The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword. The Fee character. And she would just... Every time I went to like 3 hearts, there was a beeping sound, but she also felt the need to interrupt the flight and tell me, hey, you know, your health went low, go find some hearts. It's like, no, I'm doing something. I already can hear the beeping sound. That should be enough.
You don't have to break Nintendo. The action. I know how you play games. I've been playing them for 25 years. I mean, jeez.
Yeah. But no. One that I find in RPG Maker games a lot that just totally takes me out of the game is inconsistent graphics. Are you guys okay with that?
No, inconsistent.
How would I be okay with that? What kind of question is that? What?
like,
are
say you're
okay
you're
with people
game.
Pooping on your shoes?
Yeah, exactly. Fine with.
Like, say you're playing an RPG Maker game, and you know, there's one character set that's, you know, a totally different style, or even if it's the same style, but the colors are like really bright and vivid and they don't match like anything else in the game, and it can just make you think, you know, didn't the developer notice this? Like,
or, you know, I'm just gonna throw in these graphics because they look good. No, it's I think these graphics look great on their own, so lots of good things. It's kind of like cooking, you know, spaghetti pasta and freaking hot sauce. Wait, no, I'm trying to mix good.
No, that sounds pretty good.
That sounds pretty good.
All right, okay, peanut butter and hot sauce and anchovies. Some person out there will think, I like each of these things individually, but you mix this all together, you got your salty and your spicy and all this crap, it's going to make you gag a little bit, unless you've got a really strong stomach and you're just like, I'm hungry, I want to eat something, which is the same thing with games. You'll take these core elements that by themselves are good, but unless they fit, unless they blend. I like the example with the bright graphics. Some ways that can be good, where if you've got a really dark, you know, environment, but certain interactive objects or characters are slightly brighter than the environment, it's a good way to make things stand out without having an arrow pointing at them, so the player knows, you know, oh, I should be able to interact with this. Let me check this out. But that also has to be consistent across the board.
Yeah. And consistency is big for me. Like, graphical inconsistency, it doesn't have to be jarring. It can be small. Like, imagine playing an RPG Maker game and, you know, a couple characters have face sets. But then, you know, you talk to a random NPC and he has a face. When you talk to another NPC,
that's
he doesn't have a face. And you're thinking, why does that first one have a face? Is he important? No, the game developer just wasn't really paying attention to the consistency of
the game. Well, actually, this character represents me, and I want to make me a little bit special because, you know, it's me and ego, you know. But no, I agree. That's it. Exactly.
Come up with
no, that's a huge pain in the butt is where you have to go bold or go home. If you want to have face sets for every character, have face sets for every character. But if you're only going to have face sets for certain characters, make damn sure that each face set is only for a core character that I'm going to care about. Because if you have that mixing matching, it's infuriating for the player and it totally breaks immersion.
Honestly, for me, face sets aren't actually a necessity. Your characters have to be yeah, I don't even. I'm not even using them in my game, and you're using 8-bit game. You're using them. I'm doing 16, but for me, it's not necessary. Why do you have them? Your character should be your player should be able to make the face of the character based on his personality. It shouldn't have to be given to him, and that's what I'm trying to do with my game right now. I'm not using faces besides the menu.
But that's a way. I mean, I've got the faces in the menu, but I'm also having them in dialogue. You know, I've also got name tags so you can differentiate characters, but I also like to have the face for that added element where if somebody's just spamming through text, they can at least see who is talking. And I agree that you don't need them, that it's not the end of the world if you don't have face sets, but I also, on the other hand, think they're a nice touch. As long as like we were saying with consistent graphics, as long as all the face sets are the same style, that's one thing I'm at least trying to do, is I'm trying to keep all the face sets have the same style. I mean, my first batch of face sets, they had different they were looking at different angles. Some were more flat than others. It was pretty bad, I will more than admit it. But then,
yeah,
you know,
that was awful.
Yeah, it was. But
I remember back in like RPG Maker 2000 times with the face set graphics, you know, we'd have like a couple RTP characters and then a couple of characters with like, you know, random anime faces.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, as long as they're all the same style, then, there's nothing wrong with that.
No,
but when you've got like chibi faces and then freaking super shonen hyper detailed faces, it looks terrible, Terry. It's pretty bad. But I mean, it all depends on cohesion. I mean, you know, with my bad face sets, I was just like, hey, Arkea, I'm trying to redraw these. Can you help me out? And Arkea, who is very, very damn good at art, she makes it look super easy. If you're in the RPG Maker community, you know who she is. And if you don't, you're a bad person and you should feel bad. But she took a simple sketch. I worked off of that and I was just got them all having the same different style and it made it look a lot better. So as far as breaking immersion, any element, anything, it all matters about cohesiveness. As soon as you break rank and you break form and you break what is established, it just shatters the person getting immersed. It breaks their suspension of disbelief. Suddenly they're going, wait, I'm playing a video game and this is bad.
Yeah. All right, here's one. Whether you use face sets or not, you usually have, you know, the name at the top of who's speaking. I hate it if I'm playing a game and it'll say, like, you know, main character, colon, and then their dialogue, and then the next one it just says their name without the colon, and there's just no inconsistency in a little detail like that. Like, I see that kind of stuff all the time, and it just kills me. It's like, pick a system
that's a
and
bug.
Stick with it. Otherwise, we're going to realize
exactly.
that you're not
that's
putting
a
time
bug.
Into it.
You know, it that ties in everything that we talked about from the beginning of this, was basically that you have to keep things in a pattern, in cohesive. Whatever you have established.
Or what about typos?
Yeah, or typos. You know, it's whatever you have established in the beginning, you have to stick with for the rest of your game. Don't do one thing and then change it midway. It's a big no-no with game design. It breaks immersion, it breaks enjoyment, and it makes you look bad. It makes you look lazy, it makes you look like you don't care, and it makes you look like you're just trying to rush this game out, get a quick buck or a little bit of attention, and you destroy your reputation that way. Even if it's something as little as missing a colon, it makes us think less of you as a human being.
Wait. Go back. What?
Without a colon, you're less of a man.
Alright. Fair enough.
Alright, so we're a little bit past the half hour mark. Do we have any closing comments, any closing discussions
Let's
that we want to end this up with? Personally, I would say that the big thing to take away from this whole podcast is that with world immersion, with game design in general, you want to look at the whole big picture. I mean, it's great to get bogged down in the details. I mean, the details matter. But the details, if they're inconsistent with each other, if they're inconsistent with other things that you've established, what really matters about the game is the entire package.
Be consistent. That's it.
No scrolling text. That's mine.
No
scrolling
text.
Be consistent. I mean, all of that shoved together, and Metroid Prime is awesome.
Yeah, and just honestly, play Metroid Prime after this. Just please play it somehow.
Go buy yourself a Wii and get the collector's pack with all three Metroid Prime games. That was like $70.
Yes, yes. Whoever you are out there, no matter what credo you follow, buy Metroid Prime. It's worth the money. They deserve the money. Buy Metroid Prime. It's a damn good game.
All right. So, I guess it looks like we're at the end of this. Thank you all for listening. Hopefully, we'll have one for you next week up on FinalBossBlues.com. I am Despain.
Raynard Frost.
Keelum.
All right, and thank you all for listening, and hopefully we'll have another one soon. Please leave comments for us, some feedback. We'd love to hear it. Thanks a lot for listening, guys.